It seems that there is a new story every day about a computer security breach. This winter, millions of Americans had their credit card information stolen when Target's security system was hacked. Similar security breaches have occurred at Adobe, Evernote, and JCPenney, among other places. And just a few weeks ago, Indiana University announced that 146,000 students' data, including Social Security numbers, had been exposed. This hour in Focus, we'll talk about computer security compromises and how they happen. Our guests will be Taylor Judd, IT Infrastructure Manager for the College of Media and WILL, and Cynthia Thackeray, Outreach Specialist for the University of Illinois Campus IT Security Department. We'll cover what you need to know to protect your data and privacy and take your questions on the air. I'm Jack Brighton, hosting the show. Stay tuned for Focus right after the NPR News. And this is Focus. Good morning. I'm Jack Brighton, sitting in for Jim Meadows. Glad you could listen today. Most of us use computers without thinking too much about security. But the truth is, there are many bad actors out there trying to get at your credit card or Social Security number, or they'll try to plant software on your computer and make it part of a massive so-called botnet, which can flood the internet with spam messages or launch an attack on other computers and servers. Hackers recently stole millions of credit card numbers from the Target Corporation. You probably read about that. You may have actually had your number stolen. Not long before that, there was a major security breach at the Adobe software company, where usernames and passwords were stolen for millions of accounts. The internet is great for all kinds of things, including hacking into your computer. But there are basic things you can do to protect your computer and to safeguard your personal information. During this hour of Focus, we'll talk about the most important things you need to know about securing your computer and your data. Our guests are two information technology professionals who deal with computer security every day. Taylor Judd is the IT Infrastructure Manager for the University of Illinois College of Media and WILL. Yes, he works with us. And Cynthia Thackeray is an outreach specialist for the University of Illinois Campus Information Technology and Educational Services, known around these parts as SITES. We'll talk with them about some of the recent events pertaining to computer security and what lessons we can all draw from them. And, of course, we'll also take your questions on the air and online. All you have to do as we talk with our guests is pick up the phone. You can call into the show at 217-244-9255. 333-9455. I almost gave the pledge line there. You can call that too. But to get on the show, 217-333-9455. Or by email, you can send us a note at will-talk@illinois.edu. Or you can tweet us a question on Twitter at Focus580. So feel free to join us. And to both of you, good morning.
Morning, Jack.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. Yep. I wanted to start with something in the news that's coming up at the beginning of April, and that is the Windows XP retirement. Windows XP, an operating system used on Windows computers. And it will be retired as of April 9th, or it reaches what we call end of life. Taylor, could you start out by talking about what that means?
So Microsoft has announced many, many moons ago that they are going to stop supporting Windows XP, and that's on PCs, but also with the Intel Macs now, it's on a lot of Apple computers, actually, as well. I'm actually staring at Microsoft.com's support for Windows XP ends in 35 days, 12 hours, 15 minutes, and 53 to 1 seconds.
Wow, held down.
Yeah, they've been very aggressive in marketing, and that's kind of one of the reasons why we wanted to have this show today, is to let our listeners know that basically what Microsoft is saying is this OS that has been around for some 13 years is... they're not going to be patching it anymore. They're not going to be offering support for it anymore. And that puts users at risk.
Absolutely. And in fact, Microsoft had an article that said they're estimating that 66% could be the increase in compromised machines with Windows XP after the end of life. They're not going to release these updates, these security patches. Hackers are going to sit there, turn around, release these viruses, things targeting XP machines, and we're just going to see this proliferation of compromised machines with XP.
Yeah, Microsoft releases updates on the second Tuesday of every month. It's what some of us in the industry call Patch Tuesday. So we're always preparing for updates to make sure our computers get updated on that month or on that day to make sure they're secure, because it's jokingly referred to as Exploit Wednesday. As the next day coming out, because that's how long it takes for hackers and bad actors to figure out how to exploit these compromises. So if Microsoft is only patching Windows 7, Vista, Windows 8, when they issue a patch for one of those systems, you can often reverse engineer that patch and find exploits using it for older versions of Windows, such as XP. So as they're helping newer systems, it actually increases the risk of older systems. And that's why those of us in the industry are so worried about this. I know Sites and Cynthia, the security team here on campus, is doing a lot of work right now trying to manage it here on campus.
Absolutely. And one of the things about that we're kind of concerned about is with XP, these hackers, the suspicion, and I think there's more than that, they're sitting on vulnerabilities because they know, why waste it right now? If I wait a month or two, I can release it and know it's going to work. And more, as you know, there was a time when people were using their computers for word processing, and you know, you hacked a machine, okay, there was some value there. But with the amount of people who are shopping online, doing your banking online, all of this, there is value in your computer. You can say, oh, I'm not anybody important, but think about all the things you do on your computer. There is value to your machine being hacked.
Right. Okay. Well, there's a lot there. I want to ask a couple of details, and we're using some terms. I want to make sure people understand.
Yes, please.
For example, OS. I mean, what is an OS, operating system? What is it that we're talking about here?
So an operating system is basically the software that runs your computer. When you first turn it on, you boot, and there's a special command that actually handles the boot process, but then it loads your OS. And that's Windows, that's Apple OS X, that is in other realms, Linux and other forms of OSs. And that's basically the core of your computer. And that's what we're talking about with Windows XP. It is the software that runs your computer. This is not something that you can kind of isolate off to the side and still run your browsers or run other applications. It's really the foundation and buildup of your computer. So if it's connected online, it is exploitable.
Okay. And that's the other word I was going to ask about, exploit. So what is it about? So you have Windows XP or, you know, Mac OS X or whatever it is. These are operating systems. Now, they work, right? So what could possibly be the problem?
The problem is there are always people looking for flaws in these operating systems, and it really is a war of attrition. the operating system manufacturers, Microsoft and Apple, are constantly fixing things, and the hackers are constantly looking through these programs, looking for flaws that they can use to gain control of your computer or gain access to the information that's on your computer, and they're going to use that. So it's just bouncing back and forth.
Okay, so that would be called an exploit, when they find a hole and they can get in.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, and exploits come in a lot of different methods. Probably the most common is some kind of browser exploit, when you're browsing the web and the web page you visit has code on it that can either exploit the browser, meaning Firefox or Chrome or Internet Explorer or Safari, or it can exploit the OS itself, Windows or Apple, or it can exploit programs on your computer, such as Java or Flash or other components that connect to the web as well. And all of those things are exploitable.
And I will say, more and more we're seeing the shift from operating system exploits to the software sitting on top. When it was easy to go after the operating systems, that's what these hackers did. But they take the path of least resistance. And they know that the operating system manufacturers have gotten much better about patching and security. And these third-party software hasn't necessarily. So you'll hear about Adobe. You'll hear about Java. And in fact, in 2013, 76% of the vulnerabilities that were out there affected third-party software programs as opposed to the actual OS. So we are seeing this shift. And part of that is the operating systems have gotten smart and set it to auto-update. So you don't have to think about patching as long as your OS is getting patches and isn't end-of-life. But with your software, you have to make sure that you are patching that, or you set it to auto-patch if that's possible.
Cynthia, that's an excellent point. The Windows, as we're kind of not trashing Microsoft or Apple here, but they've both been much better at this, which is why this XP end of life kind of becomes more important, because they're basically saying, look, we've been doing a really good job for the last 12, 13 years, but we can't afford to continue to do that. So, you know, all of these old hacks, all of these old concerns about the OS are starting to reemerge. But to piggyback on what Cynthia was just saying, we often talk about updating the OS. So you run your Windows update, or you run your Apple updates. The same is true of Java. The same is true of Adobe Flash or Adobe Reader. You need to be, if you're a home user, if you're at a university, if you're at a business, the best thing you can do to secure your computer, and we'll kind of get into that, I think, in the later half hour, a little bit more detail, is to run those updates. Mm-hmm. As we mentioned earlier, once the update's been out there, hackers can reverse engineer those pretty quickly.
Okay. So we have an operating system, and it has inherent vulnerabilities that people can exploit, and what we do is we update them so that they are patched.
Yes.
Okay. Get our terms straight here. Yes. All right. And if you set your computer to auto update, then you are perfectly safe, right?
Of course. No. One expression I like in security is security is a moving target.
Yeah.
You are never secure. That's not to say, you know, go disconnect your computer because you're at risk, but it's an active process. You have to be running those updates. You have to be talking to your friends and colleagues that are into computers, or listening to Focus at WILL and hearing about what's going on so that you can take action when it's appropriate.
Absolutely. And with security, you know, we talk about not being the low-hanging fruit. Mm-hmm. And what we encourage today isn't going to make you 100% secure, because that's just not possible. But you talk about being kind of secure enough, and so that when those hackers are out there, they are going after people still running XP because they know they exist. If you're making the smart choices and you're updating, you are making it more difficult and you become a less attractive target.
Great. Let me just take a moment to reintroduce our guest, and we have a caller waiting. We'll get right to, and we'll continue talking about why you should be scared about music.
Well, you should be scared.
No.
Cautious.
There you go. Okay, good. Taylor Judd, he's an IT manager here at the College of Media and WILL, and Cynthia Thackeray, she's an outreach specialist at the Campus Information Technology Security Division, part of the site's organization dealing with security. And we are talking about computer security and what you need to know. We have one caller waiting. Would welcome others if you'd like to join us. 333-9455 or here around Champaign-Urbana. You can also send us email at will-talk@illinois.edu or tweet us a question at Focus580. Let's go on and talk with our first caller. This is someone from Champaign County on line number one.
Hi, good morning.
Yes.
There was recently an Apple, and it seemed like it had some urgency update security. I think it had to do with SSL. I'm sorry I don't have more about it, but that's why I was going to ask you all. But it affected both the iOS and the Mac OS. And I'm just now checking. I'm running an older Mac OS system, and I'm not sure whether they're addressing this this problem. I see they have done everything for this particular version that they can right now, I guess. So, all right. Well, if you could treat that as well, I'd appreciate it. Thanks.
Sure.
That's clear.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for calling. That is something I actually wanted to bring up today, so thank you a lot for calling. Last week, Apple was alerted to a significant vulnerability to SSL. SSL stands for Secure Socket Layer, and that is basically the technology that allows a lot of internet communication to be secure. It's encrypted. It's a way that computers talk to one another.
And that's what means that you can type a password or your credit card on a web page and be assured that only the person who should see that data can see it. No one else in the middle is going to be able to snatch that information and go on a shopping spree.
So this is really important for devices, especially that are using Wi-Fi, wireless internet technologies. So Apple, to their credit, released a patch very quickly, especially for iOS. And I sent an all-staff email here on camp or within our department here encouraging our users here to update their iOS devices, and they did. Apple was a little bit slower in releasing a patch for OS X, but they did eventually release it. But as part of releasing that patch, they only released it for the newest versions of their operating system, OS X. They released it for 10.9, 10.8, and 10.7, but they did not release it for 10.6, which is known as Snow Leopard. So Apple has effectively, quote-unquote, end-of-lifed Snow Leopard, which means anyone who's still running that version of OS X is vulnerable to this issue, which is a fairly significant one.
Absolutely. And this is one of the things, I mean, we can come on the show and Taylor can bring up the countdown for XP, where in security, we actually like the Microsoft model where they say on this date, you can know you are getting no more support for Windows XP. Unfortunately, Apple does not have that same model. Apple traditionally, though they don't explicitly say so, they support their current model or current operating system and they go back one and then maybe two. And then beyond that, you're generally considered to be in an unsupported operating system, but they're not going to tell you that. So you find out when there's this flaw and you don't get the security patch that, oh, I need to look at getting something, but you don't get that heads up that Microsoft gives you.
And this is a significant issue for a lot of Apple users because 10.6 was the last version that had what's support for what's known as PowerPC, and that is a different CPU core within your computer.
CPU core.
Basically the processor, the brains inside your computer. And it was a different architecture made by IBM. Apple switched from them to a Intel-based processor and supported both for a long period of time, but 10.6 was the last one that supported that older version. And that makes it very difficult for a lot of users because you can't simply just upgrade from 10.6 to 10.7 or 10.8 or 10.9 in a lot of cases because the hardware simply doesn't support it. And that's often an issue with these end-of-life computers as much as the actual security implication is compatibility. Me as a IT professional, developers out there, we're always developing new things, modifying new things, and it's tough for us to find compatibilities with these older versions of OS. If we have time, I have a quick story for the website. So a couple weeks ago, we released a small patch to our website that caused an issue for some users and took a little while for us to figure it out after talking to a couple of our callers, and we always appreciate feedback. Anyone can always contact us at will.illinois.edu. We discovered that the issue was with people who were still running Windows XP. That's one of the reasons why we wanted to do this show today. So in that particular case, we removed the issue, and theoretically things are fine now for those users. But as XP gets older and older and computers get older and older, it's often difficult not just to secure them, but to make them work properly as the web continues to evolve and software continues to evolve.
You're going to have a harder and harder time getting, you know, your latest Word or, you know, Adobe Reader to run on your computer because, yes, it's that compatibility issue as well.
We have another caller to talk with. Another Mac question, I believe. Dee from Champaign on line number two.
Yes, thank you. Listening, I just have another question, but the main question I had was, are Apple computers no longer pretty safe and you don't need any kind of protection on them? Or if you need it, what would you recommend? And secondly, if you are running Snow Leopard, would you recommend upgrading to like Mavericks or something?
Absolutely. So with Apple's, they are not inherently more secure than a Windows machine. Again, there was a time when Microsoft, you know, probably rightfully so, was getting a black eye for security, but they really have come a long way. And a lot of what has traditionally protected Mac users was the fact that there weren't necessarily a lot of Macintoshes out there or Apple machines out there. But as we've seen more and more market share there, all of a sudden it has become worthwhile for these hackers and bad actors to start attacking them. So the days of being able to say, Macs are more secure, I don't need to worry about antivirus, I don't need to worry about all of this, those are long gone. And if you have not installed antivirus on your Mac, I highly, highly recommend you go out and find it. If you are affiliated with the University of Illinois, you can get free antivirus for your Mac. If not, there are good products out there. I would stick with a well-known brand like McAfee or Sophos, something like that. But you do need to be running security software on your Mac. You do need to be making smart decisions about what you are downloading and installing. Don't go by those, you know, free fly-by-night websites that you go to. Do go with the kind of the trusted names, because that's a lot of the way that we see compromised machines is what people install. It's not even necessarily a flaw in the computer. It's kind of a flaw in the person operating the computer that they are trusting and saying, oh, you know, I could pay $40 to buy this piece of software, but there's a website over here that's offering it for free. Well, there's a reason it may be free.
Yeah, it's often best when you're looking for software, when you're looking for things that you want to use, go to the vendor themselves. Apple has an app store.
Yes.
Go there and get stuff from there. They're doing some level of vetting as well. Microsoft the same way. If you work for a business or an organization of some kind, go ask your local IT professional. I would much rather talk to someone for 5 minutes and help them with whatever issue that it is than have to spend 2, 3, 4 hours fixing the computer after it's been compromised. So ask questions. That's what we like to do. That's what we're here for.
Absolutely. And kind of springing off of not even just Apple's, you have to be careful in making smart decisions when you're on your mobile devices as well. Finding antivirus programs for your mobile phone is tougher. But if you're making, you know, the smart decisions on where are you getting those apps, are you going to iTunes, are you going to the Google Play Store, or are you downloading from some shady thing that might be stealing all your contacts, sending premium SMS text messages? These are what we're seeing on the threats on the mobile side. They are out there, but they tend to exploit the user more than the actual operating system.
Speaking of downloads, I have been reading that a lot of times people are looking to download movies. And sometimes, you know, there's a questionable legality of downloading movies.
Whoa.
And we can talk about copyright. We'll talk about copyright on another program.
Yes.
The question is, you know, how safe is this really? There are, you know, numerous reports of people looking to download a movie and instead they get a nice infection in their computer.
Well, I mean, simply speaking, if you are going to nefarious websites and locations on the internet, well, they're nefarious to begin with. So they're more likely going to do something that you probably don't want them to do as well. It could be the browser or it could be what you're downloading as well. If it's going to a reputable company that's trying to, you're paying for your content, you're accessing it legally through normal means, well, that company probably wants to retain you as a customer. So they're very unlikely to do anything that may be bad to your computer because that's bad for them.
Mm-hmm. And there's the saying that if something is free, it might be because you are the product.
Yes.
We're just about at our midpoint. I want to make sure that... Okay, we have a couple people calling in. We'll take a break right now, and when we get return from that, we will continue talking with our guests Taylor Judd and Cynthia Thackeray about computer security and what you need to know. First, we'll take a short pause. And this is Focus. I'm Jack Brighton, hosting the show. This morning, we are talking about things you can do to protect your computer from getting hacked, and how to safeguard your personal information. We have two guests in the studio. Taylor Judd is the IT Infrastructure Manager for the University of Illinois College of Media and WILL, and Cynthia Thackeray is an Outreach Specialist for the University of Illinois Campus Information Technology and Educational Services, known as CITES. And we have one caller waiting. Would welcome others if you'd like to join us. 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. You can also email us a question at will-talk@illinois.edu or send us a tweet at Focus580. So we hope whatever is easier for you, you can join us if you have questions. We have a caller on line number one, David from Urbana.
Hello.
Good morning.
Yes, it seems to me that some of the sites which you used to be able to use for downloading are no longer safe, that insist upon installing their own download software. They're set up in such a way that unless you're extremely careful, you press the wrong button and download something you don't want instead of the software you actually think you're downloading. Some of these used to be very reputable sites. I don't go there at all anymore. Would you comment?
Oh, sure, absolutely. That's one of the things we were talking about before the show is you have to be very aware when you're downloading things. You install Java, and it wants to install the Ask toolbar, and it wants to change your home page. And so no matter what you're doing, what you're downloading and installing, it's always wise to click through and see the options and what it's doing and make sure that you are disabling those things that might be extraneous, what we call bloatware.
Yes.
They just increase the number of programs that you install on your computer and thus are increasing kind of your liability. We have seen, or I have heard, that more and more places people are getting kind of cranky about the fact that they are starting to do this bundling. And I'm not sure that there is a good answer except to be aware of what's going on and make sure you are unchecking those boxes and making those right choices as you're installing.
Unfortunately, you're absolutely right. I wish I had a simple answer that if you go to this location or go to this website and everything's great. I have my preferred locations. So does Cynthia, I'm sure. So does Jack. But I'd be hesitant to give those out on the, over the radio just because I don't think that that's going to stay this safe. I'm having to constantly reevaluate what it is that I'm doing and where I'm doing it. And to mention something Cynthia just said with Java, though, that bloatware that's coming with Java is actually coming from Oracle itself. Yeah. This isn't something being tacked on by another vendor or website. It is coming from the corporation because, you know, as Cynthia alluded to it earlier, it's free. And so these companies are going to make money off of you somehow. You're the product. If it's free, you are the product. Mm-hmm. And there isn't an easy way to get around it. The one thing I will mention, and I don't think we have time to get into it in detail here today, is something known as free and open source software. This is software that is developed by a community at large and then released on the internet in different capacities. Linux, as I alluded to earlier, which is an OS, is known as free and open source software. That might be a segment or a show for another time, but looking for that kind of designation on software is one way of trying to make sure you're doing using safe pieces of software. Firefox is another good example of open source software.
So there are many things that we talk about with regard to open source software. I guess, you know, the basic question I want to throw out to each of you and get your thoughts on is computers are wonderful. They can do so many things for us. I mean, they've changed our entire way of communicating and working. At the same time, they add layers of complication and things that we really need to know, not just to be good at using computers, but to be safe using computers. I mean, it seems like we have reached a point where this term digital citizenship is increasingly important and is a challenge for, you know, many people who they just, you know, look, I just want to do my email or browse the web. But the stakes are higher than they used to be.
Absolutely. And you talk about digital citizenship, and it really is the case of, you know, the internet is going to be a more secure place or a less secure place. And while there are, you know, techie people in the background doing their pieces and their part to make that happen, a lot of that responsibility ultimately rests on everyday users who are shopping online or checking their email or doing all of those things, because in your day-to-day interactions on a computer, so much of what you do can kind of go down the bad path of you install something that you shouldn't, your computer gets a virus, they start mining your computer for your sensitive data, your passwords, so they can go to your bank accounts, your email. They might start sending out spam or phishing messages under your account. They're using your computer as one of those botnets where, you know, on your own, your computer maybe isn't that powerful, but your computer plus 2,000 other computers, all of a sudden, that's a force to be reckoned with online. And they can take that and they can start attacking websites or other computers, other nations even. And that ultimately comes down to you not being careful what you downloaded and installed on your computer.
Well, and speaking to digital literacy and digital citizenship, the internet and computers are more safe the more safe we are. The more we do, the more we try to protect ourselves. We are helping each other. I try to keep the building's network secure, but if one computer in this building gets compromised, that puts the rest of the computers at risk. So if you're at home and you have one old computer that's Windows XP, but you want to keep it for one little thing, but you're not that worried because all of your other computers are nice and new, well, it puts you at additional risk because that computer has more access to the other ones in your area than if it wasn't there. It's sometimes it's known as a pivot point in technology, where you attack one weaker system to get access to other things. And the other thing I want to say about digital literacy and citizenship briefly is, we think of millennials and this digital generation as, you know, as being great at computers, and they are. They grew up with them. They can install apps. They get them immediately and start figuring things out that we can't even figure out. But it's important to know that they need to learn the same technology concepts as others, because it's one thing to just go in and install something quickly, and it's another thing to actually take a moment and think about what you're doing, because that's actually almost more important than knowing things about computers, but actually taking that moment to think about what the action that you're taking is and saying, is this putting me at additional risk? Am I okay with what's about to happen to my computer and whether or not this is safe? And taking that step back can often prevent things from doing, rather than the kid who's going to be downloading everything that they see because it's free.
Well, and kind of pivoting off of that is not just the security of your computer, but also privacy and computer security tie together so much, because you download and you install every app because, ooh, this looks interesting and I want to see what it does. Well, maybe you install it and you forget about it. Maybe you never really use it. Or maybe you use it, but you didn't pay attention when you were installing what it said it could do. And again, coming back to the mobile phones, you know, you can download and install so many social media apps. Well, sometimes those say, we're going to mine your contacts. We're going to watch everything you do on your phone. If you're not paying attention when you're installing all of that, how much information, you know, not only about your phone, you might be insecure there, but information about yourself are you throwing out there to the world potentially?
Well, just to point on that, then we've got some calls to take. You know, I have an iPhone, and there are apps I've looked at and, you know, downloaded and installed. And some of them, a lot of the social media apps will ask, you know, is it okay to post to Facebook on your behalf? And I'm like, no.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes they want access to your camera, and you're like,
why? Yes.
Well, and pay attention to those things because that's, you know, as Cynthia said it earlier, and I think it's a good point, is you are the product. If it's free, then these companies, in many cases, are not in it to free. They want to make money in some capacity. So take a critical eye to it for a moment.
We have several calls to talk with. Let's go on next to someone on line number two. This is Carolyn from Champaign. Good morning.
Good morning. Is that me?
Yes.
Okay. I came in on the conversation a bit late. I have a MacBook Pro that runs OS 10.8.5. Now, I need to go out and buy some kind of antiviral software. Is that what I have to do?
You absolutely should be running some kind of antivirus software on your Mac, even though it is a Mac. There are some free good alternatives out there. I believe ClamAV is one of the free ones that you can get.
Say it again.
ClamAV.
ClamAV.
Well,
all right. Now, I got this a couple of years ago. They would not have. I bought it at the university, in the university computer store. They wouldn't have installed antiviral software on it for me. Or how could I know if I had some on it?
So the easiest way is to look at the apps that you have installed and whether or not you have something that is claiming that it's virus software. If it's not claiming to be virus software, then you probably don't have any installed. I can tell you that the 10.5.8 is the most recent version, or was it 10.5.8? No, 10.8.5.
10.8.5.
Yeah, that is the latest version of OS X, I believe. And so you've done the patching, which is probably the most important part of keeping yourself secure. The next step is to pay attention to what it is that you're downloading and how you're using the computer. Virus software is recommended but not required. along with Cynthia, I would generally recommend it. But without knowing your individual computing behavior or activity, it's hard for me to tell you exactly what you need or should do.
And I hear you say that you bought that at the university. If you are affiliated with the university, you can get free antivirus through the university web store. And we do, because the university recognizes how important antivirus software is, we have a free license for all of our users, because we know if you're at home, you are potentially still checking your university email, doing these things, that we want you to be safe wherever you are. So you could check into that if you belong to the university.
Okay, but I wonder if this – I'm a retiree. So, and I'm also feeling kind of like I really don't know what I'm doing here. Okay?
And I will throw out there, you know, Taylor mentioned talking to people – if you are affiliated with the university, we have a Sites Help Desk who is great, that you can call in and ask questions, and they will walk you through these things. Because, again, we know that if you are making the good choices and if you are asking the questions, that makes us all more secure.
And if you don't have access to the university itself, Apple offers what they call ProCare, which mm-hmm. is a paid service. But with it, you can subscribe to their service and take it into Apple stores, which I believe the campus store is a Apple store. I don't know if there's one closer. Is there? Does anyone know what the local Apple store is?
I don't think so. There used to be an Illini Tech Center, but
that's true. Yeah. And I will throw out the help desk. The university Sites Help Desk is available for retirees as well. It's anybody who's affiliated with the
Maybe
university.
I will start over there, or call where I bought the computer and find out. Would it be a matter of bringing the computer in or downloading something? Is that what you, when you said there's free stuff available?
In a lot of cases, that could be a download. But again, it's going to depend on your individual needs. This is one of those cases where it's sometimes hard to diagnose over the phone on a radio call. I mean, generally speaking, again, I would say I would look and you're doing the first good job, which is patching. So congratulations on that. The next step is to, you know, look at your computing behavior and contact the vendor, Apple or whom you bought it from, and see if you have virus software currently. And if not, what might work best for you?
Very good. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for the call. Our lines are all full, so we'll go next to someone on line number 4, Paul from Sycamore. Good morning.
Good morning. I own a MacBook Pro also that I bought a couple of years ago. It's running OS 10.6 Snow Leopard,
mm-hmm.
and I have never put any new software on it at all, and I only use it mostly for web browsing. I don't really do any other serious application work with it at all, maybe a little bit of music production, but that's mm-hmm. local.
Yep.
Using iTunes and that kind of thing. But that's all. So it isn't on the internet much. And so I'm hoping that I'm reasonably safe. Can you comment on that?
So generally speaking, obviously, the less that it's connected to the network or internet, the more safe you are. That's absolutely the case. However, in your particular stance, 10.6 is what we alluded to earlier as an end-of-life OS as it pertains to Apple. Apple has acknowledged a significant security exploit, as it has to do with SSL. SSL is going to be used anytime you authenticate to a website, whether it's a web forum, whether it's your bank, whether it's your email. Anything of that nature is now vulnerable on your computer. So at the end of the day, if you're going to be on the web and connecting to anything securely, you do need to find a way to update that machine. If it's of the Intel variety, then Apple does allow you to continue to update that. If it is of the earlier PowerPC variety, then unfortunately you are looking at a hardware upgrade.
Okay, I'm pretty sure it's the Intel variety.
Okay.
And the only secure information that I've ever put over it is the password for my email account. That's it.
The thing to... Go ahead, Cynthia.
So this is a case where a lot of times people say, oh, it's just my email. But if someone can get into your email, they really often have kind of the keys to the kingdom. Because if you think about when you set up different accounts online. You maybe have set up your banking account or another email account or any number of accounts.
Twitter, Facebook, etc.
Exactly. Where do they send that registration information? Where do they send that I forgot my password email? All of that comes back to your email account. So aside from the somebody can gain access and use your email account to send spam and phishing, last year we had a phishing outbreak happen on campus. We had a number of people have their email accounts compromised, and there was one person who came into the help desk who ended up with like 100,000 messages in their inbox just as a result of falling for a phishing message. And it was a case of, oh, it's just my email. But people can do a lot of damage just through your email account. So I don't want people to underplay the importance of email.
That give you a question?
Kind of secure banking or anything like that. It is basically just mail. So,
yep.
But I appreciate the information.
No problem. And that's an important point, too, is everyone is going to be different. Your security profile, what you need to do, is going to be unique to how you use the web and how you use your computer. So while we can offer general advice today, it's important to know that you have to consider it for yourself. Neither Synthony, myself, or Jack can tell you how to be secure. It's a moving target.
Mm-hmm. We can provide some basic guidelines, though, at least. So.
Yeah.
We have a couple callers left. Before we get to our next caller, I hope they'll forgive me, but I wanted to follow up. You used the word phishing in terms of email, and people may know what that is, and some people may not. Can you?
So first, yeah. You know, on radio, you can't hear that this is phishing with a PH.
Yes.
And what this is, much like, you know, you go fishing with a rod and a hook, and you're trying to catch fish. In this case, people send out an email that, you know, they range from really bad grammar, please send us your username and password, or, you know, I'm a Nigerian prince, you've recently come into money, you need to send me your bank account and we'll finish this transaction, to really well-crafted, they may steal the graphics from your banking site. But ultimately, these phishing messages come in and they're trying to get information out of you. And it might be really high-value stuff like your social security number, bank account information. Or it might seemingly be just kind of low value, information about your family. And what you might not realize is, you know, sometimes security questions, password reset questions, use that kind of information. And they're building a dossier about you and they're going to use that information. So phishing messages are these. They're trying to get social engineer or get you to give up information about yourself.
Now, the other common one I see is email messages that look like they're from people I know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I look at the message and it says, wow, check out this video. Awesome. And it just has a link that they want you to click on.
Yep. The best way to kind of protect yourself about all of those messages, well, A, you know, pay attention to what's going on in that message and, you know, check and see if it is actually from that person. Because sometimes it's the case if you look at the email address, one letter or something like that is out of place and clearly it's not from the person you think it is. Or if it doesn't have the same style as the person you're talking to, avoid that. But the other thing to do, especially as it pertains to banking or personal information that people, you know, are sending you in phishing, don't click on anything. Don't respond to that email. Go separately to that company's website and contact them independently of that email to try to verify the information that they're requesting from you.
Absolutely. And then tying back to this Apple SSL is when you go to a website, anytime you are typing in this personal information, look up at that address bar where you type google.com or whatever you're typing. And if you are putting in sensitive information, it absolutely should have that HTTPS.
Mm-hmm.
That is secure. If you go someplace and it wants you to put in your bank account information and it just says HTTP, run. Close that web browser. Don't even think about doing it.
Yep. S for secure.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yep.
We have a couple callers, actually three. We'll try to get to them all. Next, line number one, Zarina from Champaign. Good morning.
Yes, I have some rather uninformed questions, I'm sure. But I have an old computer and, started out with Vista and then went to Windows 7. And it's functioned all right. And now I find every time I try to shut down, I get this message that there is one update that has to be done. Now, I'm used to it doing, you know, several updates and once in a while doing that, but this is every single night. And then it kind of goes into labor, and it goes on trying, and I go off to bed, and it shuts down eventually, and then the next night it says the same thing. And I'm concerned it's not making the update, and I'm trying to upload my book online, and I'm terrified I'm going to lose my book and so on. So I just wondered, you know, how serious a problem this is. Should I just ignore it? Should I really, should take care of that? Have someone come in and look at it?
The unfortunately, there's no simple answer on that because there's hundreds of Microsoft updates, and it's often the case that some updates don't apply to you. Some updates do. Generally speaking, as long as you're applying the updates, as we said earlier, you're doing that good job. Now, that one update may be very important, may not be. It's impossible for me to say, unfortunately, over the radio. I would say, if you are really concerned, yes, you can take it into a vendor to have them look at it, provide some advice. But unfortunately, it's impossible for me to say whether or not that update is going to be incredibly important for you.
Yeah, unfortunately, it could be a matter of a, you know, foreign language pack, in which case, no big deal. Or it could be a security update that isn't being applied, in which case that is vitally important. And there are so many reasons that a patch can go wrong. I would definitely go with this is a case of having somebody look at it and see what's happening.
And if I may, it sounds like you're writing a book. I would say, please back that up somewhere else.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. I do. I have it on my external
drive. Good. Okay.
Perfect.
Good. All right.
I'm desperately trying to get it off into cyberspace.
Well, good luck on that.
Okay. And the other question I have, and it's very quick, I get these little pop-ups that say that I should disable, or I can disable certain things in order to get faster movement on my computer. And I suppose I have to consult someone to find out which things to disable.
That's generally a good idea. If you're not sure exactly what your computer is offering you to do, you know, sometimes I know on Windows machines it'll say you're not using some of the icons on your desktop. Okay. I can make those go away. It's a good idea if you're not sure what your computer is offering to talk to someone. But I'm going to steal your thought for a second. A lot of times we see on web browsers, you'll get pop-up messages saying your machine is infected, and it looks like it's coming from an antivirus program, but it's not. And if you click on that window, there's a chance that you're initiating an install. So if you see these messages come up while you're browsing the web, the best thing that we can say is close that browser window.
Yeah, ignore them as fast as you possibly can. That isn't to say there isn't useful information out there on the web, but generally speaking, if it's something that's popping up, especially in a web browser, then that is probably not good advice. That is probably someone trying to exploit your computer in some capacity, and I would ignore almost all of them in almost all cases. If you do have a specific concern of a pop-up, I would go talk to one of your local IT professionals, whether it's a vendor or the companies you work with.
Hope that gets at your question. We have a couple callers left, and we're going to run out of time here pretty quick. Let's go next to line number 3, Bill from Monticello. Good morning.
Hello. I run Linux, Ubuntu.
Oh, very nice.
Computer, and I do all the upgrades all the time with it. And is that enough security?
For people who aren't aware, Linux Ubuntu is a open source operating system, not nearly as popular as Apple or macOS, especially in the desktop client environment. It's much more popular in servers and infrastructure, so it's something I actually deal with a lot in my day-to-day operations. Yes, if you're patching it, if you're keeping it up to date, you are doing the same thing that a Windows user or an Apple user can do as well. If it's a desktop computer, along with all of the other forms of OSs, Linux, Windows, Apple, it is the general recommendation as well to run antivirus software, though, again, that's a recommendation, not a requirement. Cynthia alluded to something earlier, Clam AV, that is available on Linux as well and works in in Ubuntu, in Red Hat, in all of those other versions.
I am going to throw out again, it comes down to the person sitting at the computer. If you're running Linux and you start, oh, I'm going to throw up a web service and do crazy things, and you don't make those decisions wisely and properly, you're still at risk. So be cognizant of what you are doing as you're using your computer.
Okay, now I have another question. Thank you. I have a partitioned hard drive,
mm-hmm.
and I have Windows XP on the partition. I never use it online. I never go online with that, in that partition. I only use it to control equipment that I have that is older equipment and needs Windows XP. I don't think it'll work on the modern grade of Windows. Am I okay, or is it possible while I'm browsing the web or something in Linux that it will get into my computer and get into that Windows XP?
Generally speaking, no. Again, without looking at your computer and knowing your exact behavior, it's difficult for me to say that in absolutes. But once you've booted into one or the other, you are isolated into that particular environment. So if you do have XP and continue to use it, be sure to not use it whenever you're connected to the internet.
I'm sorry to say that we're just about out of time, and there's much more we could talk about. I have a list of things we did not get to today, but perhaps we can do this again.
It's a big subject matter.
That's right. And I apologize to the last caller we couldn't take on the show. But let's do this again, and I want to thank our guest, Taylor Judd. He's an IT manager here at the College of Media and WILL, and Cynthia Thackeray, outreach specialist for the University of Illinois Campus Information Technology and Educational Services. That's it for Focus, and we'll pass it on to the next show.
Thank you, Jack.
Thank you.
Thank you.